Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
Let me welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, Ray White is a DJ, a radio personality, so much more. But I just said to him off mic, I said he's forgotten more about the radio game than I'll ever know. And it's true. This guy's been around a very, very long time for a young guy. And he has worked all over the place in radio, and I'm thrilled to have him. Ray White, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. It's my pleasure to be here, and I guess we go way back to Long Island days, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you know, so many people know you from LIR and so many other places. But let's do a little bit of your history, if you don't mind, and let's start from the beginning. Where were you born? Where were you raised?
I was born in Syracuse, but I didn't come back to New York till I was my Long Island days. My folks were from Connecticut, so I grew up in Connecticut and Massachusetts, a little bit of time in West Virginia, but mostly Connecticut and Hartford. So my first hanging around radio stations and everything was all in Hartford and Springfield, whether it was University of Connecticut, University of Hartford stations. My first commercial job was in a little station up in Springfield. And then I came down to Long Island, down to New York, and that was it was in the 70s, and I came to WLIR, which was just this amazing radio stations with their radio concerts, the staff, all the music that we played. I mean, we could go to Pat Metheny one night, and the next day we're welcoming Ozzy Osbourne, who had just bitten the head off a bat at an Epic Records meeting. And I mean, it was just crazy. It was just the most I was there for 7 years, including when we flipped to new music, to new wave. And it was just really, really exciting. And so then I was in New York for 24 years and then left to go do jazz in San Francisco. And I've been here now just 20 years as well. So pretty much New York and San Francisco have been my home for the last 40 years, 40 plus years.
It's very interesting, and you bring up LIR, and I think that's where, you know, so many people that are listening here now, you know, here in New York and even Florida, I mean, a lot of transplants down there, they knew you from LIR days. It was such a pivotal station in so many ways, and so much happened there. Like you said, you know, you had metal, and you had jazz, and you had all these different things before you ultimately went new wave. And it was actually a pretty good call to go new wave, because it was like right on the cusp. What did you think when you heard, I guess, from the program directors or whoever, hey, we're going new wave, we're going all new wave? Was it exciting, or was it scary or disgusting? What was your take on it?
Well, the behind the scenes, of course, you know, no one ever really makes a decision without management or somebody saying, okay, this is the reality. And the reality was that BAB, PLJ, and NEW, and not so much R&W up in Westchester, but what had happened was that probably too much information here, pulling the curtain back too far, yeah, is that there were more ratings now, that there were more diaries in Suffolk County on Long Island. And then, of course, was New York City breathing down our back. So here we were, this little pea shooter radio station that played really cool music, but we were kind of getting squeezed from New York, and then also from Bob Buckman and BAB and his crew there. And so what management finally said is, we're going to have to do something. We're going to either, we can't see getting rid of rock, but we're going to have to do something. And so we met with, what was his name? Lee Abrams came and met with us a few times. I could smell him a mile away in that he just wanted to use us, because new music, punk, new wave, whatever you want to call it, was getting very popular. Now, we had been playing U2, we had been playing Elvis Costello, we'd been playing Nick Lowe and Rockpile and The Clash and all those bands, but we also mixed that in with Billy Joel and Charlie Daniels. I don't know how we did it, but we did it. And we kind of pulled it all. We all thought it was, well, it's great. It's like a restaurant where you can have a little bit of everything. And management's saying, no, you've got to be more specific. What are we going to do? So Dennis McNamara, in his wisdom, said, well, you know what? We can stay cool and we can stay hip if we just maybe just take this this narrow, you know, this Joe Jackson, The Police, Elvis Costello music and ride that and see what happens. So we had a couple of meetings with this consultant who I could see he was just trying to pick our pocket, which, you know, for people, you know, cool radio stations, there's always consultants who circle around you and want to, like, OK, what's the special sauce in here? including he had access now to our entire library, and he figured out what we were doing. And so he was either going to ride this thing or he's just going to steal everything we had. But he was credibility for my Elton Spitzer, our general manager, to go, okay, if he gave us the blessing, we would do it. So what happened was we came back from meetings, and then Dennis and Elton had a few meetings. And then Dennis came back to me. I was the music director at the time and the afternoon guy. And he said, we're going to do it. We're going to go. And he said, I didn't want to call it New Wave. He said, let's call it New Music, because that's more, it's not so specific as punk and. And, you know, it's not quite so trendy as New Wave. So we, you know, New Music. So we did it in August of 82. We flipped the switch. So to answer your question, it was really exciting. Now, in some ways, to not be able to play Steely Dan anymore. And Billy Joel was furious. He went out and had lunch with Dennis McNamara. He goes, how come you're not playing my music? And Dennis was very nice to him and said, well, he goes, Dennis, it sounds, if you listen to Joe Jackson, I'm playing the same amount of instruments, except for Richie Cannata with a little saxophone. It's the same thing. And he goes, Glass Houses is exactly like a Joe Jackson record. And then Dennis finally had to look him in the eye and go, but you're Billy Joel. You're not cool. And Billy was so ticked, pissed at that he, I don't know if I can say that. He was so ticked at that.
Yeah.
And so what happened was, you know, people like that were, Charlie Daniels got it. Dennis called Charlie and said, I'm sorry. And he goes, it's okay, Dennis. You helped launch me. I've got my own career going. And then, you know, the Grateful Dead and all the Hot Tuna and the Pat Metheny and the Steely Dan and all that went. But we were part of a really exciting thing. So I was there for that 6 months. So I was there for probably, you know, it was 77 when that music started, 78 for sure, until 83. So I was there for the good bulk of it. And then I was there for the switch as well. And it kind of felt like my job was done, and maybe I'd been there almost 8 years and it was time to move on. And so I quit or fired. I'm not sure which it was, but Dennis and I get along great these days. So it was okay. It was just time for me to move on. And so I left.
Let me jump in and remind everyone of who they're listening to. You've heard his voice for years. WLIR, if you're from Long Island. And again, you just got a little bit of that history, actually a lot of history in a couple of short paragraphs there. Ray White is our very special guest, and he's a witness to history, and he's again, he's been around radio for a very long time for a young guy, and he's a DJ and radio personality, and he's out on the West Coast now, but thrilled to have him here. Frank McKay here with Ray White. Let me go back to the date, August 1982. What stands out to me is it's exactly a year from MTV exploding and coming out, starting, right? So August 1st, 1981 is when MTV came. And, you know, of course, that, you know, that changed everything that you could imagine. How much of MTV's success do you think affected Dennis McNamara in making that switch?
Well, he made the switch before, as you said, so it was kind of brave.
82, right? The switch.
Yes. Oh, so
it
they
was
had
a year
it
later.
Right. Oh, we did it a year after MTV.
Yes.
I think that, you're right, because Duran Duran had those like mini movies. Well, the interesting thing was all those bands, like their budget for an album would be $80,000, and then they'd go shoot a video for $300,000.
Right.
I think it had something to do with, I mean, he didn't talk, I think Dennis was more, you could probably talk to him about it, because he was more like I was. We were middlemen and of service to the music, the bands and the music. And the MTV thing was kind of a little pop and a little contrived and not quite as didn't have as much integrity. It seemed a little bit more disposable. So I think that we knew that something was brewing and something was happening. And if we could be in on this early, maybe it'd be a great wave that we could, you know, pun intended, that we could ride for a while. And so, but I don't remember us, you know, sitting around and going, wow, if MTV goes on this or whatever, because we generally were ahead of everyone. We were, you know, getting our imports from Gem, and they were one of our sources. And then the importers, the guys that were in Queens, they would get them, you know, come right in and be on my program called Off the Boat that I did on Sunday nights, which was an import show. So a lot of the music, so we were ahead of a lot of it. So we were kind of going with our gut and our instinct and what was going on in the clubs, and you know that it was a very exciting time.
Yeah, well, a couple of things there really stand out. And again, Ray White here with me, Frank McKay. And you mentioned about the, you didn't use the word, but I mean, basically superficialness of MTV. And I can imagine a lot of the guys that grew up in the 70s, and I'm talking about early, early 70s and that came from the 60s, boy, they must have hated what was going on with MTV because it was contrived and it was about makeup and it looked really flashy and phony and everything else. But this is what 14-year-olds were watching and 13-year-olds and everything else. And maybe another reason to hate it, you know, was because it was this next generation coming up there. But it's really interesting. I didn't think of it until you just said that. And I know that wasn't your intention, but the 80s in general is generally considered like a superficial, era. You know, even Coke was, cocaine was kind of a, that kind of drug,
right.
A lot of substance, just a quick hit and just to show off how much money you had and all this.
Right.
So, I mean, MTV either helped define what the 80s were or it was just a product of what was going on there. Just kind of interesting. And when you said that, it hit me. Let's talk about you getting into LIR when you first got there. And you mentioned that there was all types of music, happening. And that to me sounds exciting. And I can imagine a guy like yourself and Dennis and some of the other guys there who really loved music. Must have liked the diversity that was allowed to you guys. And, you're talking about Ozzy biting the head off the bat. He was from Sabbath, and Sabbath grew out of the 60s and the 70s. And there's a lot of diversity in just a couple bands that you mentioned there. When you got there, what was your general attitude towards what was going on?
I came from a really cool station in Hartford, WHCN. And that we had a huge library equal to LIR's, but of course LIR had the concerts on Tuesday nights. So they, but it was very similar age group, very similar bunch of long hair music fans and cool DJs. And so when I came down there, here's the thing, as a kid, I moved a lot. I mentioned that I lived in Massachusetts and Connecticut and West Virginia. And I moved a lot. My dad was a salesman and was always trying to go for the next best job. And so to me, as I would go to new radio stations, it was a lot like moving into a new school. You know, you got the kids the same thing happened at NEW where everybody wanted, one click pulling you this direction and the other. But I found that the common denominator was whether it was, Earl Bailey, Joe Bonadonna shared his apartment with me, said he had an extra bedroom. So I was there with Joe Bonadonna and Earl Bailey and then DiBella came and joined Michael Ross, who's no longer with us. Michael is just a great guy. He taught me how to say, L-I-R, not say it L-I-R. He goes, no, Ray. He was driving me around in the car going, you got to say it W-L-I-R. L-I-R. Like it's, and so it's cute. Yeah. And so we were all just music freaks. And we all had, somebody liked, prog rock, or somebody like me had a little bit of a jazz background. And so we all just had, but the common denominator was, and it's funny, and I have a, I don't know where I was recently when I had a huge record collection in front of me. And I said, this is how we used to do a radio show. What was on was playing, and you'd turn and look at a wall of albums. And this is for real. You'd look at a wall of albums and you'd go, what would go with this? And you'd begin to, in your head, go, well, okay, this is a Blue Oyster Cult. So maybe we can get something from England will go with this or something, or you'd pick. Or I remember doing segues Led Zeppelin to Joni Mitchell. I think I had the other way around. Joni Mitchell, and then I did California, and then I went to Going to California by Led Zeppelin. So the segue was the mood and the energy was very important. And so we picked our own music, and, those days were gone when the consultants came in. But it was really fun. So anyway, that is what LIR was like in those days. It was just really free-form. Just we were like the public address system, as Jim Ladd used to say, the West Coast DJ in his book. He said that we had kind of controlled the public address system for the cafeteria, except for it was the local radio station. And so that's how it was. It was fun.
You ended up in 84 going over to NEW, right? And yeah, basically, yep. Yeah, in 84, you went there. And I imagine Dan Neer was there, right? And guys like that. Was Richard Neer still there?
No, he was gone. Or he was just about to leave. And it was and Mark McEwen, who became a really good friend. I talked to him just the other day. He's down in Florida. Mark McEwen was there. And of course, let's see, Scotso was there. And Dennis Elsis and Carol Miller. And
that's right.
So we had a great time.
Yeah,
it was. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. What was your impression of going in there? I mean, did you feel like you're going back to where your roots were? I mean, was it just a gig, or was it something that you really sought out?
Well, it was my second time there. The first time I was either overlooked or rejected, and I forget who got the gig. But I then a few months later there was an opening there. Whether it was Richard Neer leaving, I'm not sure. But Charlie Kendall, who I knew from WBCN in Boston, was a great program director, and he was in charge of it all. But you really had to, when you went to NEW, is you had to get Scott's approval, and there were quite a few guys making a lot of money who were real legends at that radio station that it wasn't like you had a group interview, but you had to get the nod from a few people there on, yeah, he'll be cool. Okay, he might work. Now, for me, there were a couple of radio stations that I always wanted to work at, and one was WBCN in Boston, because keep in mind, I grew up in Hartford, which is, you know, 80 miles, 90 miles from to Boston and 100 miles to New York. So I was hip to both markets, and I knew the power of NEW. I mean, WNEW is one of the great radio stations in America. Yeah. So it was a big deal to put my resume there, to have my interviews and then listen to my audition tape and all of that. I mean, Dave Herman was there, and God, he was huge, you know, a legend. Yeah. So it was a big deal for me that I was part-time, and then I was filling in on the weekends, and then moved up when Dave Herman went back to the mornings, and Pete Fornatel actually came in my first day of doing the midday shift and shook my hand and got on the air with me. And he said, there've only been four midday guys. It was Jonathan Schwartz, myself, Dave Herman, and now Ray White. And it was something I'll never forget. It was a great moment.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, actually, they're two very different stations, or they became known for very different things. But LIR is I don't want to make the same vast comparison to NEW, because it's hard to compare anything to NEW and what the impact that it had. Historically, but certainly for Long Island, is LIR was a change in what was going on. Frank McKay here with someone who was witness to that history, and he's again been doing this a long time, and he's still going strong. He's out in on the West Coast. His name is Ray White, and you definitely recognize his voice if you've been listening to radio on Long Island or in New York for any length of time. Frank McKay here with Ray White. We got a couple moments left. So what's life like for you now? I mean, you're doing jazz. You must love that, right? I know you've always loved
jazz.
Yeah,
well, actually, it's funny because I always say it goes back to my parents. My dad had jazz records and my mom had classical records. And then I discovered rock and roll and folk music myself. But I grew up with my dad and Ahmad Jamal and George Shearing and, you know, Henry Mancini and the jazzy side of things. And then my mom had Rachmaninoff and Grieg and all of that. So all that kind of went into me. Well, I left NEW for CD 101, which was the new jazz station in town, and was there for 10 years in New York and loved that. And then I came out to San Francisco to do another version of that here at KKSF. And did that for 7 or 8 years. And then they dumped the format and let us all go. Clear Channel dumped the format, which was really kind of dumb, but they did it. They had the keys to the car. Yeah. And so I had studied classical guitar and knew classical because I worked in a record store. And I kind of did the rock and some of the classical records at a small record shop in Hartford when I was in college. So I had a little bit of a background. So the program director here at the classical station said, I love Ray White. I love his delivery. I don't know if he knows anything about classical. And a friend of mine said, well, I'll find out. So he said, Ray, do you know anything? I said, well, I know what a sonata is. I know what a symphony is. I did study classical guitar. It was a hobby of mine. So I auditioned. So I've been doing classical now for 11 years in San Francisco, which is pretty funny. And also on the internet, on Jazz Groove, which is this great new channel, I'm doing a jazz show in the evening. So, and I'm about ready to go on in Paris on a rock station. So, Frank,
wow,
all my loves, rock and roll, classical, and of course, jazz is all, it's all being taken care of now. I don't have much time to myself, but.
Well, listen, it's thrilling for me to have you on. I mean, I was listening to you. I don't want to make you sound too old, but I was a young kid and I used to love listening to you and Off the Boat. I used to love Off the Boat and
yeah,
so much of what you did, everything you did. And Ray White, I want to thank you for being here. Maybe I can get you back for a part two one day and do a little bit more history. But thanks for being here.
Thank you, Frank. It's been great. And, you know, radio's been, I always say it's been a great magic carpet for me. It's allowed me to go to a lot of places, you know, whether it was Abbey Road Studios or broadcast Roger Waters show at the Berlin wow. Wall or my Japanese radio shows. Radio's been a magic carpet for me. And thanks for letting me talk about it.
Thanks for being here. Congratulations for all the success. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in. You've been listening to The Voice of Ray White, and for those of you who haven't heard him in a while, it's because he's out on the West Coast, but you could hear his jazz, all, you know, actually you can hear his classical too, here online, everything, you can hear everything nowadays everywhere, but look out for his rock and roll too. He's not going to have much time for himself, but he's going to be doing some great things. Ray White has been our very special guest. Frank McKay signing off with DJ and radio personality Ray White. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.